The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show Best Of Podcast.
We welcome you back. Great to have you here for the second hour, and we will get back to your calls in just a moment. You can give us a ring now at 855-242-7285. More guests around the corner. We asked a question earlier on Twitter about the NIL, and we're getting some responses in. Freshman? Is that right? Okay. We'll go along with that. And a lot of reaction to our Twitter question, and you can continue, and we will share with you our responses here in just a few minutes. Let's continue with more phone calls and check out Mike, who is in Alabama. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Paul. How are you today?
Very well. Thank you.
I just wanted, as a continuation from yesterday's show with the greatest football players of all time in the SEC, of course, we've got Herschel Walker and Bo Jackson, but one name I'd like to add.
And who
Big
that
John Hanna from Alabama.
Yeah, John Hanna.
He was a bulldozer.
Yeah, John Hanna was one of the greatest offensive linemen in both college football and NFL history. At one time, when he was in the NFL, I think he played with the Patriots, he was considered the greatest NFL lineman.
So I think he needs to be up there with Bo and Herschel.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you sharing that. Let's continue with Catfish up next. Hello, Catfish.
Paul, thanks for taking my call. Would it be appropriate to visit just a little bit about the Kentucky Derby and horses?
If you would like, sure.
Well, the reason I'm interested in it is because I've done Civil War cavalry reenactments for over 20 years, and I really love the equine athletes. And are you familiar with the story of Seabiscuit?
Yes, but go ahead and share it with us.
Now, Seabiscuit was a famous racehorse back in the 30s that outran a Triple Crown winner in a match race. And Seabiscuit was well known for watching other horses in the race in order to size them up and to pace himself to outrun his competitors. He was a very, very intelligent horse. And when I watched the Kentucky Derby, I saw the same kind of behavior in Strike Rich. When he was coming up the rail, he turned his head and was looking at the other horses, and as he sized up the two leaders, he's watching them while he gains on them, and you could tell when his brain clicked over and says, I got this, because he took his eyes off of them and started looking straight down the track for the finish line. So just a great racehorse and a great race. And I just wanted to point that out. I hope other people will enjoy watching the replay and appreciate watching a really smart horse do his thing, and I wish him best of luck in the Triple Crown.
Well, thank you very, very much for sharing that. It was interesting because, yeah, you think I know what Mike Leach said about that opening up the door, but, you know, football is really not a sport conducive to gigantic upsets. There are upsets. Don't let anyone try to convince you that there are not. But how many times do you walk out of a stadium or turn off your television on a Saturday and say that's the biggest upset in 100 years, which is really what we were talking about in the Derby. It was unprecedented. It was just simply, the horse wasn't even in the race until the day before. And we're not just talking about the seventh race at Aqueduct. We're talking about the biggest and most celebrated horse race in the world. And we threw that question out there yesterday, and a lot of if I had to encapsulate what the responses were to our question, what's the biggest upset you've ever personally seen, meaning been at an event, I heard a lot of Lake Placid 1980 USA over America, Buster Douglas over Mike Tyson, the upset of Virginia a couple of years ago in the NCAA basketball first round, the first time a one had ever lost to a 16. I mean, a lot of you mentioned predictable games, the kick six. That was an upset, but a lot of people have forgotten that Auburn was ranked in the top five going into that game. It was on their home field. I think in the realm of college football, there have been very few. Now, there have been some. Remember ULM over Alabama, but that was not a very good Alabama team. Alabama lost this year as a prohibitive favorite over Texas A&M, but nobody thought that's one of the biggest upsets in college football history. It was a big upset, but before the season, we all talked about that game as being maybe the game that Alabama would lose. But so it, you know, college football does not have. I mean, in basketball has a few more. There are certainly, but it's a different type of sport. But I just don't know if we've seen anything quite like that one in the realm of sports. Anyway, let's get back to the calls. Paul is in Jacksonville. Hello, Paul. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. How are you? Before I get to my reminiscing about Birmingham, you might remember the goalpost. It used to be outside of 78 Highway going into Birmingham. I used to get off from police department about 5 in the morning to go over and watch my brother play at Arkansas. And the marquee on the outside, I had Alabama could play Notre Dame in the morning, Michigan State at night, and beat them both.
That's right.
I don't know whether you ever saw the old restaurant or not, but it was good. And before I hang up, I know you got a lot of folks. I just wanted to tell you that the fellow that said about the pendulum swinging left and right and it comes back to center, sometimes like politics, it can swing so far to the left that when it does come back to center, it makes what used to be left conservative. So that's one thing we got to remember. But I just want to tell you about the goalpost and that marquee house. I don't know if we've ever seen it or not, but I don't even know if that restaurant's there or not. But it was kind of reminiscent. That was a great team in 66. I think it was the best team we ever had, personally.
Yeah, Paul, we talked to Keith Donovan the other day, who did the very famous book on the 66 season, The Missing Ring. Let's check out Richard, who is up next. Hey, Richard, go right ahead.
I agree with the guy that made the statement about beating Notre Dame and Michigan State in the same day, and I'm a Tennessee fan, not an Alabama fan. But I saw in the paper this morning where two high school kids up in the Northeast, 15 and 16-year-old kids, signed contracts to promote someone's product. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is a very early age, and that's NIL in the beginning.
Yeah, again, it's not legal for high school players, but you're seeing it, and there is loose interpretation. But I'm right now high school. What's happening in high schools would make some of us who lived in a different era, blush. Everyone always thought they were the craziest group, but you know, time has eradicated all that. Let's take a break. More to come. We have a lot to do here on the program. We'll talk more about the NIL in a few minutes with somebody who's involved in it, Alex Scarborough, on something that you may not be aware of from ESPN. We're coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
And Alex Scarborough joining us from ESPN, the story about why the debate about opting out to prepare for the NFL draft has never been louder. Alex, appreciate your time. You write a very interesting story here about the Alabama Pro Day a few weeks ago when the best player wasn't one of those guys eligible, but it was Will Anderson Jr. And you talk about a number of players who, quite frankly, might be better off not playing another year of college football. Good afternoon, and take us through your reporting.
Oh, good afternoon, Paul. Yeah, it was an interesting experience being at an Alabama Pro Day and seeing Evan Neal and Jameson Williams, two of the top 15 picks, and knowing that the best player on the field is not draft eligible, and Will Anderson, a guy who I think pretty unanimously agreed upon would have been the top pick in this year's draft. And just the idea that a guy like that has to wait for another year, it's nothing new in college football. I mean, you go back to Jadeveon Clowney, Leonard Fournette, Trevor Lawrence. These debates have popped up, but the interesting twist in this is actually two things to me. One, what happened 2 years ago with COVID and the flood of opt-outs that came from that, and the fact that all those fears about what would happen if you sat out a year, you know, what would you do during that time? How would you get better? Would you get worse? You know, how would the NFL respond? The NFL is very set in their ways, typically. And what happened? You know, Ja'Marr Chase and Micah Parsons are two of the most high-profile opt-outs, and they're the rookies of the year coming out. And then you have the NIL wrinkle in all of this, which is still relatively new, which allows these players to make money. And that's a double-edged sword in this debate, because on the one hand, you have players who are signing these million-dollar deals coming out of college, so out of high school, excuse me. So now they have the money where if they need to sit out, if they want to sit out a season, if they want to go do a 6 month draft prep program, and you know, they have that in the bank. They're set. But on the other hand, do they want to give up the earning potential of a season on the shelf? So there are a lot of wrinkles to this, and I think we're inching closer and closer to the day where we do see a guy opt out. Coaches I spoke to, multiple sources I've spoke to, all agree on that. It just happens to be that this year you have a guy in Will Anderson who's just not going to go that path whatsoever. But I think eventually that day will come, because the dynamics have shifted in the last 2 years pretty dramatically.
Alex, you mentioned a couple of different things there, but I want to have you expound on when a player decides to opt out. There's a lot of things that they don't have, but if they have enough money to support themselves, what would they most likely end up doing, and where would they do it?
Most likely what they would do is a version of what we saw during the COVID opt-out, which is they would go to a draft prep camp. A lot of people have heard of Exos. There are multiple training facility companies that are out there that help these guys. Every top draft pick you've heard of has gone to a training facility like this. They typically go in at once their season's over, but you can go before that. They created programs like they did with Chase and with Parsons, where for 5-6 months they were working with these guys 5-6 days a week. Ja'Marr Chase was in Houston from October all the way through his draft prep, so he was there for a very long time, working on things like agility, working on his health, working, you know, they really helped with his flexibility, his mobility. They helped him with his speed, obviously. And he also had a wide receivers coach while he was there as well. So he was doing traditional football things. Now he was doing them outside of a team dynamic, which is really interesting and frankly a difficult adjustment for a lot of these guys to make. But that would be the route they go, and it's not cheap. I mean, it's $30,000 or more if you want to go for a 6 month stretch like that. But as I said, the NIL piece of this has made that a lot easier pill to swallow if that's a path somebody wants to go. And as I said, there was a lot of fear. I mean, when NFL executive 2 years ago told us, you know, what's going to happen with these guys? They're going to be out. You know, are they going to get worse? Because I can't imagine them getting better. And well, as we saw with Chase, as we saw with Parsons, I don't think anybody can sit here and argue that those two guys in particular were any worse off by not having a junior season.
And Alex, if you're a coach at one of these schools with one of your top players considering doing this, other than paying them legally or through some other means, what do you say to them? What's been the pitch, or what will be the pitch?
The pitch will be, in a lot of cases, to put bluntly, will be, you know, how can we work this out where financially it makes the most sense for you to be here? If it's a guy like Will Anderson, who has essentially nothing left to prove in college, at that pro day, I asked Nick Saban, like, what, you know, spring is a time for improvement. How does a guy like that improve? And he said, you know, point blank, that was the best defensive player in college football last year. And, you know, to his credit, he said Will wants to be a better football player. He's not going to be satisfied. He's going to look for ways to improve. But you fast forward a couple of weeks of the spring game, and he's cracking jokes about how, well, he maybe needs to improve in pass coverage, but he helps the pass coverage the most as a guy who's sacking the quarterback. So Will's a rare instance. You know, a guy like Bryce Young, for instance, needs to maybe come back and show a few things to scouts. You're going to have those kind of debates about, look, yeah, you are a top-end guy already, but if you're a receiver, hey, maybe you can show a little bit more in terms of yards after catch. If you're an outside linebacker, can you perform better against the run? Those type of detail things that might lift you up a couple of spots in the draft. But quite honestly, it's going to come back to NIL. It's going to come back to, how do we make this work where you feel it's worth your time and the risk involved, the inherent risk of injury? You're already seeing NIL be part of the debate for guys who were on the fence about, do I come back for my senior year in college this past winter versus going turning pro early? That was part of it. We saw with the Kentucky basketball player was the player of the year coming back for his senior year. That's going to be a part of almost every conversation in college football, but certainly when it comes time to talk to these guys about whether they really want to jump in and take that risk of opting out.
And Alex, finally, flipping it around, how does the NFL feel about this? When you're looking at a player like the two you mentioned, Parsons or Chase, versus the one who is out there playing, perhaps even as late as January 10th, with the potential, like we saw in Williamson's case and Mechie and so many others, getting hurt late.
Yeah, there's no doubt if there is a season-long opt-out, there are going to be some executives who might not love the idea of that. I mean, this is, as I said, a league that's very set in its ways and wants to see guys who want to compete every down and all those things that football coaches and players love to talk about. But it's also a bottom-line business. And if the bottom line says this guy is a top-five level talent, and we've seen in, you know, again, bring up Chase and bring up Parsons, that it didn't hurt those guys. As long as they're comfortable with the fact that for 6 months they weren't just sitting on their hands doing nothing, that they were improving, I think they're going to be okay with it. I think, frankly, there's an upside to this as well, right? Because it's not just that they didn't take on the risk of not playing for a season. It's that they have an entire season where their body has not been taking the hits that are associated with big-time college football, especially in the SEC, especially if you're playing all the way until January 10th, and you're supposed to fast-forward to a draft only a few months later. If you cut all that out, your body is, I mean, let's speak clearly, is going to be in a little bit better place as long as you're doing all the right things around that. So I think there's a give and take there, where some teams are going to have questions about it. Some teams are going to look at past evidence and say, okay, if this guy's as good as we think he is, he's worth taking it with a high pick.
Alex Scarborough, fascinating story. Many, many thanks, Alex. We appreciate it. When we come back, we are going to dig deeper into why some players are staying in college. We'll talk to a man who is taking a big role in convincing players, maybe State U is a better place than sitting out. We'll talk about that when we come back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
And welcome back. The topic is every day, and that's NIL. And yesterday, of course, the NCAA issued some guidelines from their perspective, which most people have utterly laughed at. The headline here in the Miami Herald, how billionaire John Ruiz is giving millions to UM players and why he says it's worth it. We're delighted to welcome John Ruiz to our program, the lawyer from South Florida. John, thank you very much. It is really interesting that we appreciate it, and we can't wait to talk to you. I hope you're well. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate the invitation.
Certainly, a lot of people in Florida are aware of you through you know, seeing you over the years on television and many other mediums. But the rest of us have become acutely aware of you in recent months with your you know, being very involved with the University of Miami Athletic Department. Can you tell us how that came about? I know that it was not the first time you've been involved. You've been involved for a long time, but especially with the NIL piece of the puzzle.
So I went to UM in the 80s. So I was there from 84 to 87. My three kids went to the University of Miami. My two boys played baseball at UM, and my daughter was a sensation, so obviously we have a lot of connections to the University of Miami. We've been supporting, sort of like traveling with the team when my sons were both playing baseball and my daughter as she was dancing. But we had a very, you know, positive merger and acquisition back late last year, which just got Securities and Exchange Commission approval about a week ago. And a very large transaction, so we had the monetary power to be able to enter into these types of transactions. But I think what's most important for people to understand is this is a real business for us. You know, LifeWallet is the largest repository of data ever been built, probably in the world now, as it relates to healthcare information and data and pharmaceutical records. And when we started looking at different options of advertising the product to get the word out, the first numbers that I got back for just a week's worth of television and radio and social media was about $1.6 million. So I found that to be a super high number, and I realized that because of the marketplace that I thought athletes could do very well for us as it related to getting the message out. So I created sort of like a strategy behind how we were going to do that. And because the companies that I'm the CEO of, especially one, and the other one that I own is Cigarette and MSP, which powers LifeWallet, we found that this was a very, very good way to get the word out and have a true arm's length transaction sort of contract with these players, which quite frankly has worked out extremely well for us.
Well, John, some of this is old news for Hurricane fans, but in there have been so many media reports that I've really lost track of what exactly you're doing. I've read some that include most of the team, specific players. Can you detail what exactly you are doing? And I think we all want to know, even though you've alluded to it a minute ago, you know, how it pays off.
So great question, Paul. And the first thing is that people should understand that about 95% of our players, we're already at the University of Miami. We just don't have University of Miami players. We have players at FIU, and we actually have some contracts with other universities very strategically sort of created because they either have a connection to South Florida, which is where our companies are located. But, you know, we do have Frank Gorshun. We also have a player from Sean Taylor's brother, Gabe Taylor, that, as we all know, passed away, which is a professional football player. And we're adding more and more. But I think the more important component is we're not providing these NIL agreements simply because of athletic ability. In fact, one of the very first agreements that we entered into was with the long snapper. And quite frankly, I've been watching football for a very long time, and I couldn't even name you the long snapper of some of these professional teams. So I found that doing things contrary to what everybody expects is generally what works for me in terms of all the businesses that I've ever put together. I've been named kind of a disruptor, and I think that's what I've kind of done in this industry. I've kind of disrupted the norm of what people thought what these NILs were being pieced together for. So what ends up happening really, and this is the reason why I've been so vociferous about frowning upon collectives and 501c3s, and that is that our companies were in existence from way before. This is a real business transaction for us. This is not us creating a collective or a 501c3 simply to get money to players. We're actually getting a bang for our buck. So are the players, by the way, because these players are now more recognized. And these players, you know, they'll tell you themselves that they're actually learning a lot. So we air and film commercials. We have a whole production studio. We have about 30 people in a production studio. They're all well, very orchestrated together to send the message out as it relates to our different companies. So I think this is really what NIL was designed to do, right? So I think that we've kind of hit the nail right on the head. And I will give you the best example, I guess, when Nigel Page was going to be, you know, contracted with through both, you know, LifeWallet and Cigarette. A lot of people said, don't put out the number. So I spoke with, you know, the family. I spoke with the agent. And I thought it was the best thing to do. And we got over 5 million, you know, hits with just that one tweet. And I think that's what really people started to find out what LifeWallet was about and what it involves.
John, you're a serious businessman, so you're right. You're not just doing this to do it, even though you have allegiance to that school. So you mentioned what they get out of it through, you know, being involved and learning about the business world. What does your company get out of it with so many different players representing you? What's the residual?
We've gotten huge results. We're probably over 80 million, you know, impressions and counting. And quite frankly, if you look at it, there's nobody in the country that watches college sports, whether it's football, basketball. We even have some baseball players that probably everybody knows about LifeWallet now. And if you really think about it, one of the reasons why I wanted to put out the Nigel Pack agreement and the amount is, who isn't going to be talking about Nigel Pack and what LifeWallet did and Cigarette? And if, you know, John Reeves is a good businessman, if he made a good investment or made a bad investment, what's the quid pro quo? But, you know, just talking about it at everybody's home, it really is going to put out the name of LifeWallet, and it's really going to put out the name of Nigel Pack. So what you have going on is, in reality, everybody's focused on Nigel Pack, and they're focused on LifeWallet. Everybody's seeing this. They understand it. You know, we're very proud of our platform, not because of the monetary aspects of it, because money comes and goes. You know, I've had the fortune of really meeting a lot of the families, you know, after these players sign up and they end up contracting with us. And, you know, people, I think, have a grave misconception of what goes on. These families are really looking for their players to go to schools where they're going to learn. They're going to get a very good education. They're going to be supported by the administration of the school, because, as we all know, you know, the sport is just some hours within the sport itself when you're playing the actual game and the practices, but there's real life behind all of this. And these are young kids, right? And we got to be a little bit more focused and mindful that these are the kids, this is our generation to come. These are the kids that we have to guide and empower the right way to make sure that they feel confident, they know how to speak the way that you would want them to speak in interviews, and they're all super happy. And I get, you know, text messages from them, and we have a really good relationship with the kids, and they all have a good relationship with themselves, and I think that they're networking. I think it's an amazing program that we are very proud of. I have an amazing staff, you know, with me, and we're very proud of what we're doing.
If you're just joining us, so we're talking to John Ruiz, the Miami billionaire lawyer and entrepreneur who's become very involved with the UM athletic department. John, you mentioned these collectives, and this is what not every school, but most schools are trying to get to. You heard the NCAA yesterday issue guidelines as if they could do very much about this right now. But what are your concerns about these collectives? Florida has one now. Alabama just announced one recently. Almost every major college football power in the country is going in that direction.
So, look, what bothers me about a collective is the following. There's theory and then there's reality. And what happens, there's really talented lawyers. There are really talented people that are kind of trying to put all of this together. But I think they're missing out on the practicality of it, right? So when you have a real quid pro quo, there's got to be some value to the entity or entities that are providing the compensation. Because if not, what are you really doing? What is the value that a collective gets? And here's the real crux of the issue, right? And, you know, I am an attorney. I'm a litigator. What I do in court really much is cross-examine people. And that's pretty much how I was able to prove the concepts of what we're taking to court. How can somebody justify? They've never in their lives, you know, donated to a 501c3. They've never put money into these collectives to all of a sudden, you had an eclipse and you started doing this that you never did before. It's quite obvious that the reason why it's being done is to find a way to put money in the players' hands. That is not what we're supposed to be doing because we're not doing them service. This is not supposed to be to pay athletes to win games. I think we're being very short-sighted if we're thinking that the whole purpose of an NIL is to win games. NIL should not be connected with the athletic ability of a player or whether the team wins or not. Now, the reality is that a lot of players become popular and famous because of their athletic ability or how well they do. So I could say that Shaquille O'Neal, in my opinion, is probably one of the most light athletes, right? He's not playing anymore, but he's still coming out in commercials. So he's not tied anymore to athletic ability. He's tied into what his name, image, and likeness is all about. And that's what we should be teaching because we also have to understand is that the majority of these athletes never make it to the pros. And we have to provide them with a better understanding and platform. These are the people we're going to have in the business world tomorrow. And, you know, I think as a businessman, and whether it's an attorney, just as a human being, I would want to be make sure that I teach these youngsters that there is a lot of life left whether they end up playing a sport or not. A lot of these athletes retire at 30-something. Some of them reach their 40. But there's a lot of life left after that. And I think we really need to educate. I would love to be able to sit down with the NCAA because if I was handling this whole thing, I would make the NCAA provide guidance in this fashion. The school should participate in the NIL process, right? And the way that the school should participate is just like in any other industry, right? So I do a lot of Medicare and Medicaid. So the government has a time period whereby somebody that wants to enroll in Medicare has what they call open enrollment. You should be able to be a student athlete, go and speak to the university about the team that you potentially want to go to, what the school has to offer, and then what NIL possibilities exist. Why are we trying to disconnect everything? That doesn't make sense. That's not the real world. Do it all so that everybody gets approved. You know, there are lawyers and agents in this process, and then get the schools to approve the particular company so that everybody understands what the platform is. Right now, it's a complete disarray. It's the Wild Wild West. So what I have to do as a litigator, as a lawyer, as a businessman, is create my own platform to build it around the existing laws so that we don't break any laws, we don't violate any NCAA rules, and at the same time deliver a product.
Before you go, because there's such a bad reputation connected to all this right now, and you've heard many, many coaches talk about how it's not sustainable. Your model clearly is different, but where does all this end, or does it keep going as you see it? Because the NCAA is a weakened organization. They're leaning heavily on Congress. That opens up a whole nother door. Where should it go next?
So the NCAA is a monopoly, right? It's been determined to be a monopoly, and I think that their systems are very antiquated. I think it could still work, but you got to have, you know, what I consider smart business people. I think what happens in a lot of what we see is that people are able to place things on paper, but they don't know the practicalities of how it works. And I see that, quite frankly, with a lot of lawyers that are kind of operating in this space right now. I think what I've brought to the table is real business acumen, because I've run so many companies before. And when you're able to do that, I think you can probably deliver a really good product. I think NIL is really good. I think it could be utilized in a very positive way. But it's just, you got to get a group of people that really know what they're doing, that understand business. Business is quid pro quo. Nobody in their right mind is investing into something in a business that they're not getting something in return. I believe that because we're doing it in the way that we're doing it, we're actually getting a value. Everybody else is going to get tired, you know, and here's what's going to happen. I've kind of predicted sort of what's going to happen already, and it's coming to fruition. What happens if you have 100 people in a collective and now all of a sudden they start paying players? There's going to be disagreements within that collective. And before you know, there's going to be lawsuits about the collective and who got paid and why they got paid. And it's going to get really ugly. I think we need to clean that up. Again, I think that this is a very good ability for these players to make money. It's unfair. These you know, student athletes work really, really hard. They can get injured. And things can come to an end in terms of their sort of projections. You know, I can tell you my own son, my oldest son, which was a very talented baseball player, he blew his UCL and he was unable to continue playing. So, you know, fortunately for him, he went to law school. He's an attorney now. But, you know, you need to understand, and there's a lot of families that go through this, and it's not fair that they can't eat the way that they should, the clothing. I mean, those are the things that I've really learned. And quite frankly, I've been really surprised, but at the same time, very impressed with how well these families are dealing with this situation. The one place that they really need education on, and it's got to come really fast, is that it's unfair for people like myself that's been in business for a long, long time and understands that, to have a student athlete that's, you know, between 18 and 22 years old, maybe a little older, in their families, making determinations on $100,000s of dollars deals. And that's just not fair, and we need to make sure that gets protected, because I'm not going to take advantage of that. I've shown that already in the Wong case, but you know what, there may be other people that would, and that's not the way it's supposed to work.
We'll leave it here, although I think we could talk about this all day. John Ruiz from Miami, many thanks. We really appreciate your time, and all the very best. What a conversation that was. We must go to the break now, because we blew right through the commercial there, but we wanted to hear the whole story from Mr. Ruiz, and we are coming right back.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.